Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial.
And good morning. Welcome to Talk Louisiana. It's good to have you with us this morning. I'm Julie Baxter Payer, and I'm filling in for Jim Engster. And he will be back later this week. But we really appreciate you coming on with us this morning, listening to some wonderful conversation we're going to have. We have Suzanne Romig, who's going to join us shortly from the ARC Baton Rouge with some new exciting news on their new location and new services for young people graduating from high school with autism and who want to have job opportunities here in our community. And we'll also check in with veteran political reporter Mark Ballard for the very latest from the state capitol and an author with a book that will intrigue a lot of you listeners. I know a lot of our listeners love politics, and this will really make you think twice about how you approach politics and how you follow politics and what kind of impact you're actually having on the process of the political elections of candidates across the United States. So we'll have all of that in our show here this morning, but I'm very pleased to have with us right now Suzanne Romig, who joins us. She is the ARC Baton Rouge Executive Director. Good morning, Suzanne. It's great to have you with us.
Good morning, Julie, and thank you for having me on.
Well, it's not a problem at all. I know the ARC Baton Rouge, the ARC in Louisiana with its many chapters, has been around for more than 60 years, and I feel like trying to introduce the ARC Baton Rouge is trying to introduce an old friend. But tell us, for those of the listeners who don't know what ARC Baton Rouge does, what is the ARC Baton Rouge?
We are a service provider for children and adults with all types of intellectual and developmental disabilities. We serve all ages, all ethnicities, all income. We really, it's throughout a lifetime for our clients.
And really, the ARC Baton Rouge, some of the news for those who don't know is in the past year or so, you have a new location in South Baton Rouge. You want to tell us where that is and what kind of services are beginning to open up there?
Yes, we are launching the first part of our new strategic plan, which is to consolidate all of our programs into one headquarters. So we purchased a building and recently moved. It's on Old Jefferson Highway between Parkview Baptist and Sunberg Lane. And it's 12,000 square feet where we have our business office. We've got our in-home services staff there. And then about half of the building actually is the new day program for our young adults, and there's been a really big demand for daytime activities for the high school kids graduating with autism. So it's really a great place for us all to be together.
It sounds wonderful. Let's talk a little bit about what is needed when a young person who may have autism graduates from high school. What are the needs and services that the ARC Baton Rouge, sort of the gaps that the ARC Baton Rouge is now beginning to offer to fill for families across Baton Rouge?
Well, most of these families, have relied on either the public schools or private schools as a safety net as their kids come up through the grades. But as they approach, 12th grade or the age that they can exit out of that program at school, the parents are realizing that all of a sudden the bus is not coming anymore. So we really are trying to answer that demand. We have really a program and staff set up for every level of functionality. We've got the high functioning. We've got those who may need one-on-one type of support. So, and we're helping them to navigate their way through the Medicaid system. Many of them, qualify for funding for programs like this. So it's really, it's kind of a maze for them, and it's difficult, and it's a hard time for the parents. So we really step up and do all we can to walk them through the programs.
And I'm sure they appreciate that. There may be some parents out there who might want to call in if you have a question for Suzanne Romig, the Executive Director of ARC Baton Rouge. The toll-free number to call in and be a part of this conversation is 1-877-217-5757. That's 1-877-217-5757. And Suzanne, you really want to be known as a family resource center, ARC Baton Rouge does. And what are some of the things that ARC Baton Rouge traditionally through the the years has become very good at in terms of helping families who have children with developmental disabilities. And many times, if I'm not mistaken, these folks are they're older children too. It's not just young children. It's older children who are living in the home with their parents, sometimes, as you mentioned, past high school.
That's correct. By consolidating all of our staff into this one building, that was the first step that we needed to take to physically be together. And now that we are together in one headquarters, we're really working on this connectivity to cross-train the staff from all of the different programs to be able to answer questions and to be there for support. If they work in the in-home program and they learn about a family who has a new baby with a new diagnosis, that staff member doesn't have to put them off or have them call somebody else. That staff member is going to be trained and have the resources available to them right there to help that person right away. So that's what we're really excited about with this new family resource.
And Suzanne, we have a call from Trevin in North Baton Rouge. Trevin, do you have a question for Suzanne?
Yes, I have my first cousin's son who's autistic. He's graduating this year, so we're very proud of him. Just trying to get a little bit of information, maybe a phone number, address, or website that we can reach you guys at.
Thank you so much for calling in. Suzanne, that I'm sure a lot of people would like to write that down if you all, as listeners, would like to get a pen or to a keyboard where you can type this down. How can people get help from the ARC Baton Rouge?
Well, our main number is 225-927-0855. Can call there. Our office hours are from 8 to 4, Monday through Friday. There, like I said, we're working on the cross training, so anyone who you speak to there will have some answers and will get you answers right away to your questions. We do have our North Baton Rouge location. Our day program is still open on Dallas Drive. We will keep, maintain that, and we're very proud to say that program for adults with disabilities has been open for many years. So that will stay open. So we're able to serve both areas of town, the north and now the south.
That's wonderful. We have a call from Joey on Plank Road. Joey, do you have a question for Suzanne Romig with the ARC Baton Rouge?
Yes, actually. My little sister is dyslexic. She used to write when she was a kid. She'd write my name with backwards J's. I give that little history because I've noticed my 5-year-old daughter, she's still learning to write, but she is writing her J's, E's, Y's, everything backwards. My question is, when should one consider starting to, I guess, look for dyslexia, I guess, help or training?
Well, I would suggest that as you're seeing the first evidence of some type of dyslexia there, there are specific programs that address that directly. There are many typical people who are dyslexic, so, I would remain optimistic that it could just be, just that minor thing at this point. But have you had her evaluated yet or brought her for any type of assessment? I know those are available and probably through the public schools.
We have not. She actually has a testing assessment for the magnet program in February.
They should be able to assist you with that. They are equipped with the right tools and the assessments at that age to be able to help to give you some type of a diagnosis or to help you to determine the best direction for her right away.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call.
I'm sorry, Joey, I think you were saying happy Mardi Gras, and certainly happy Mardi Gras to you. And Suzanne, I know there's a close partnership and has been over time with the ARC Baton Rouge and the public school system here in Baton Rouge. You really do work together to help students, don't you?
That is correct. That is correct. We do have a transition program where we teach juniors and seniors in the schools on their campuses. We provide classes of instruction to help them to be prepared for that transition when they transition out of school and into either some type of job, some type of workforce, or if they want to continue their education. We just get them ready for that next step because in many cases they're not even thinking about it.
When we come back after the break, I want to talk a little bit about employers who might want to partner with the ARC Baton Rouge if they have opportunities in their system, and also the entrepreneurial opportunities that are opening up with the ARC Arts brand, which I want to make sure that all the shoppers and consumers in Baton Rouge know about. But if someone wants to give to the ARC Baton Rouge and support the work that the ARC Baton Rouge does for people with developmental disabilities in Baton Rouge, how can they do that?
They can go to our website under donate or give, and can do a secure credit card or PayPal transaction there, or a check in the mail made out to the ARC Baton Rouge would be great.
And what is your website, Suzanne?
Our website is ARC Baton Rouge. That's A-R-C, Baton Rouge, spelled out, .org.
Okay. And for the listeners that are interested, we're going to continue this conversation with Suzanne Romig, the executive director of the ARC Baton Rouge. When we come back after this break, we'll talk about developing the ARC Arts brand here in local arts markets and a new open-air workshop and makers market that will be opening to the public at the ARC Baton Rouge's new location soon. Stay with us. And welcome back to Talk Louisiana. I'm Julie Baxter Payer, and I'm filling in for Jim Engster today. And we're so glad to have you listening on the program this morning. We're rejoined by Suzanne Romig, the ARC Baton Rouge Executive Director. Some exciting new information we just spoke about regarding the new location in South Baton Rouge on Jefferson Highway, or Old Jefferson Highway. And then some new entrepreneurial opportunities that are opening up for folks with developmental disabilities and without, that are going to be moving into the arts arena. And Suzanne, tell us about the ARC Arts brand. What is that, and how can people support that?
Well, we just established the ARC Arts about 5 years ago when we just were trying to pinpoint different types of or different mediums that our participants would be able to express themselves. Many of them are nonverbal, and any type of art activity allows them to kind of come out and express their feelings and their interests. So we started with block printing, where we actually, they help us with the design. We actually carve the linoleum. It's a little bit risky with the knives. But once the blocks are carved, they're inked up, and the participants can help us with that. We've turned it into block printing tea towels and T-shirts and note cards. And it's turned out to be very popular. We have a lot of customers, a lot of ladies who come back every time we have a new line of tea towels or a new design. So the ARC Arts brand is really taking off.
And if I'm an employer in Baton Rouge and I think, well, I might have a way that maybe some of the functions that are performed in my operation could partner with the ARC Baton Rouge, how do I pursue that? And what are the things that you would sort of go through to try to evaluate whether you could partner with an employer and offer opportunities for young people coming out of high school with developmental disabilities in this community?
Well, we're beginning to get new interest from some small business owners. The main thing is for one of our representatives to come out to the actual work site and do an assessment and kind of just take a look at what goes on there and how we can carve out different activities and move those to a person with a disability who might, it might be a good fit for them, whereas for the business owner, it might be entry level, or it's repetitive and it's just a lot of high turnover. It's hard to keep one person in that position. So in many cases, a person with a disability is really the best fit. So we just are trying to grow the awareness and let business owners know that, in many cases it can be the right fit, and it can help free up some of your higher paid employees to spend more time on other things during their day.
If you'd like to be a part of this conversation, the number is 1-877-217-5757, 1-877-217-5757. And Suzanne, you have mentioned that you have a new open-air workshop and makers market that may be in the works soon regarding ARC Baton Rouge, perhaps opening to the public at some point. What are the plans for that, and how are they doing?
Well, we've had the opportunity to acquire the building next door to us, which is originally was a gymnasium of the school, which is the building that we purchased. So it's an open air, and we are setting up little activities in there that might require a little bit more space, maybe a little noisier. So a couple of examples are that we are setting up some pottery wheels in there. We will be throwing pottery. We're going to do some small woodworking projects. We're doing repurposing furniture with some of these chalk painting projects. So we're instructing our program participants to learn skills to where they can explore some of these crafts. And, you know, it's the sky's the limit. So once the projects are completed, there is also available space there that will turn it into a little market. So anytime during the day, during the week, the public can stop in and see what activities are going on. We want it to be inclusive, so we're welcoming people, you know, without disabilities to come and see what we're doing and volunteer and help with some of the instruction. And then we will be able to sell some of their goods out from that space.
That sounds really exciting, a lot of fulfillment for young people who can be able to see their products made and sold in an open-air market-type setting. I want to talk a little bit about funding for services for young people, K through 12 and beyond, and even before kindergarten, and beyond that, too, for adults with developmental disabilities. I think a lot of people think that, well, there's got to be government funding through various health programs and all, either at the state or the federal level, and that will pretty much take care of the need. But is that the case, and where is it now in this current day that the organizations like the Arc Baton Rouge need to go for funding?
Well, we do, I would say 85% of our revenue right now comes from Medicaid, which we are, as you know, we're very grateful for that support. In most cases, though, the reimbursement, you know, barely covers what our cost is to actually deliver those services. So, you know, looking at it from a business standpoint, you know, a break-even point is something that we rarely see. So it costs us to deliver services. That's where our additional fundraising and contributions, and then our, you know, our product sales, that types of things, all those things add up to help us to be able to, you know, to stay afloat, basically, and continue the quality of services that we deliver every day.
Can you give a family member an idea if they hear you this morning and they're interested in maybe partnering with the Arc Baton Rouge for someone in their family and they call up the Arc Baton Rouge, what is the process? How do you walk through evaluating what kind of assistance or support you can give to each individual family?
Okay, well, the babies, usually, you know, starting with the babies, if there's a diagnosis, say, for a 12 or 18-month-old, the pediatricians usually will direct them to Early Steps, which is the early intervention program, where we have professional therapists who actually, you know, go to the homes of the babies and coach their parents on, you know, how to best help them develop so that when they do start public school, you know, they'll be on the same level, they'll be caught up with their peers. But once they get into the school system, usually if they're in a special education class, they will have what's called an IEP, and that is a special an assessment that sets up a plan for them to best achieve and meet the goals that would be to the best of their potential. So when they graduate from school, if they have, you know, anyone who has an IEP, when they're out of school, they go then to Capital Area Human Services is the intake for the next step for them to get help with funding for what takes place, you know, when they become a young adult. So Capital Area Human Services is the intake once they get out of school. They'll do an assessment. And again, you hear a lot about these waiver services that the rates were just restored a couple of months ago or last year. That's where that would kick in, and then they would be able to to qualify for some of those waiver services that are funded by Medicaid.
And you really serve some families for years. I mean, as far as almost the whole life of the child through graduating from high school, right? You form real bonds with the customers there at the Arc Baton Rouge.
That's exactly right. Many of the our staff who have been around, you know, with us for a long time and worked in children's services with the babies maybe, you know, 20 years ago, now they're seeing them come back up through the ranks, and they're young adults. They're exiting high school and they're back. And it's rewarding, and just to be part of those families and to walk every step of the way with them, you know, to help them and support them, it's really rewarding.
Give us the telephone number one more time, if you would, Suzanne, if people want to call and support or find out more information for their family at the ARC Baton Rouge.
It's 225-927-0855 is our main number. And like I said, we also are proud of our day program that's located on Dallas Drive that serves North Baton Rouge clients. We're proud of our staff there. They've been around a long time. And that number is 225-923-3852.
Thank you so much, Suzanne Romig with the ARC Baton Rouge. Thank you for what you do for this community. And when we come back, we're going to speak with a veteran political reporter you know and love, Mark Ballard, live at the state capitol this morning to give us the very latest with the new legislator stepping in and the latest news from the Louisiana state capitol.
Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial.
And welcome back to Talk Louisiana. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. Joining in this conversation, I'm Julie Baxter Payer, and I'm filling in for Jim Engster this morning. And joining us now is a regular that needs no introduction, but we will anyway, Mark Ballard, a veteran political reporter from the Louisiana State Capitol. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Julie. How are you today?
I'm good. I hope you're well, too. And we wanted to talk about the new leadership coming into the state legislature slowly but surely over the next few months. But we were thinking this morning, some of those folks are missing this week because there's a big thing going on in Washington called Washington Mardi Gras, right?
Yes. It seems like just about everybody who has any sway whatsoever is up in Washington these days for the Mardi Gras. And it might make a nice break from the impeachment hearings. So,
well, and so I guess some of the new leadership is being decided at the state capitol in terms of committee chairs, committee vice chairs. I think the Senate put out some of their information last week. What are we looking at as far as the new faces of leadership at the state capitol when they go into session?
Well, and I'm sure that in the House's version that, you know, a lot of that is going to be decided, you know, in Washington as they kind of talk together with a lot of the businesses and special interests that go up there for that event. But I think what we're seeing is that the in the House, you have Clay Schecksnyder, who is the speaker who got to be speaker based in large part on Democratic support. And part of that Democratic support is the Democrats saying, we want some say-so in here. We know that you can pass pretty much anything without our involvement, but we want say-so in the policy decisions that are going on. There was a lot of pressure, particularly from the Attorney General, Jeff Landry, and from U.S. Senator John Kennedy, to basically, you know, forget the Democrats and just push them off to the side. What we saw on the Senate side, where there is a two-thirds majority, and the Republicans can pretty much you know, do whatever they want and ignore the Democrats completely, is that the Senate leadership is basically all in the hands of the Republicans. But those committees, if you look at them carefully enough, that there's a balance of it. It's not all the far right wing Republicans, but there's moderates involved, and then there's Democrats, so that most of the issues are going to be decided by one vote or so. Whereas, you know, in the past that hasn't been the case. And particularly looking at Jude A, which is which will be deciding a lot of the tort reform legislation. I know a lot of the Republican Party folks said, you know, we need to get rid of that and put some real, you know, a harsh anti-trial lawyer senators on those committees, and they have, but they also have balanced it out, and any tort reform is going to be a one-vote decision of any of the legislation that comes through there.
If you'd like to talk to Mark Ballard, the number to call in is 1-877-217-5757. It's 1-877-217-5757. Mark, you mentioned the word balance, and it makes me think of the Revenue Estimating Committee in terms of last year there was a lot of talk about the stalemate and refusing to sort of recognize between the politics going on in the House, the amount of money that the state really did expect to bring in. What are we seeing on the Revenue Estimating Conference? And I guess the Budget Committee is scheduled, I think, to meet next week. What are we seeing as far as the budget stalemate that was happening last year? Are we likely to see that repeat?
Well, that is still up in the air right now. I know that the Republican, and this is the House Republican issue now, and their argument is that we shouldn't go with a updating the number, and you know, basically, you know, not spend all of the money. And the new speaker, who will be sitting on that that committee, will he's asked for more time to look it over and to see where he is coming. And he's giving indications that he may not be blocking it the way that the old leadership did. The old leadership basically blocked the approval of how much money. You have to have an approval from the REC, and he's indicating that he won't block it. But I guess we'll find that out at the end of the month.
And what happens in the 65th Parish, right, in Washington, Mardi Gras, right?
And what happens in Washington, Mardi Gras. It's interesting how, I think that this started out back, if my recollection is such as it started back, you know, right after World War II, when a lot of Louisiana congressional staff couldn't get home for Mardi Gras because, you know, it's not a holiday for the rest of the country.
Oh, really?
And
really?
Now it's, yeah, I know it comes as a surprise to me, too. And so they did it for that, and then more people started getting involved, and now it's a big economic development engine where we kind of show our culture off and say, yeah, and you need to come do business in Louisiana.
Yeah, a big deal in Washington, especially at the Hilton there. The governor recently making it known that he supports splitting the LSU chancellor and president position. How is this news being received? What is the significance of that, and how does that play into all the discussion right now about Jay Darden possibly and getting the president's position at LSU at some point, and actually Commissioner Darden openly saying he's interested?
Well, the first part of that is that the supervisors had been talking about this for some time, that they're trying to figure out how this would actually work, because what you have is LSU is the flagship, but it also has campuses in Shreveport and Eunice and Alexandria, which are definitely not flagship campuses, and also is kind of the administrator over the hospitals. And F. King Alexander, who, you know, did a fine job doing both of them, did not get along well with the other systems, and the UL system and the LCTCS, which is community colleges and technical school systems. They did not work together, and I think the system presidents have always felt like, you know, we need to be working together, and the flagship was not part of is not part of that. And so I think that's kind of doing a lot of it, and the governor coming out, and I'm unsure. I mean, you may know better than me on this, but I'm unsure whether he was going along and sending a message to the supervisors that says, I'm on board with this idea, or if he's, you know, leading the band and telling the supervisors to, you know, stop hand-wringing over it and go ahead and make that decision.
Well, and so what does that do for Commissioner Darden in terms of his possibility for one of those positions?
Well, what would happen is that for a flagship is that you would get a more academic, scholarly type, which was one of the strikes against Alexander, was that now he is a published academic, but the faculty was saying he's not published enough, you know, that he spent too much time doing administrative duties. So you would get an academic to run chancellors, to run the flagship, as what is the case in most universities. And then you could have an administrator that would be, you know, the forte of Commissioner Darden to run the system. Now, if that's what they have in mind, I don't know. But, I mean, that's how we could break out.
And, of course, they are doing a national search, and so that will take place and move through the system. Tom from Woodland Ridge is on line one. And, Tom, do you have a question for Mark Ballard?
I do. Hi, Julie. Good morning. Great job, as always. Mark, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Want to touch on one of my pet peeve subjects, which is tort reform. Did not get very far in the last session. Any chance for it to move along, at least out of committee, to an open light process this term?
Well, you have a majority of the legislature that ran basically on tort reform as a way to lower insurance costs, automobile insurance costs. I'm not sure how that all kind of links up together, but they did run on that issue. And you have leadership that says, well, they are going to be pushing some of the tort reform. Tort reform is basically limiting an individual's right to sue in the courts. And then if they do get into the courts, it restricts their ability to actually win and how much they could collect if they do win their lawsuit against an insurance company or a business. There is a majority within the Republican Party, within the Republican legislature, that is pushing that. Now, is it going to be the whole smash like what was passed last year, or not passed, but considered last year, or will it be picking and choosing out of that package? I think it'll be more of the latter than doing all of that.
Well, I guess we can remain hopeful that they will at least pick and choose the appropriate pieces that will have the most positive impact on Louisiana drivers.
Well, again, I don't think that anything that they picked out is really going to lower the cost of the insurance, and I think that that's something that they're kind of downplaying. The insurance industry itself said that it will not lower the cost of insurance if you pass all of this stuff.
Very quickly, we have a caller, Patrick, from Inniswald. You have just a few seconds, Patrick. What's your question?
Yeah, I saw that there's an insurance lawyer suing the Louisiana Bar Association because they have mandatory membership. If you're an attorney here in Louisiana, you see that being revoked, you know, mandatory membership? You should have a right to dissemble if you don't agree with the Bar Association.
Mark, do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know. I've seen this in the past where in other states where there's been an attempt to kind of break away from the Bar Association, and it's not been successful. But
I think it's actually going on in about 7 states right now and ultimately will probably be decided by the Supreme Court. But thank you for your question, Patrick. And Mark, thank you so much. When we come back, we're going to talk with Eitan Hersh on his new book, Politics is for Power. If politics is your hobby, is that keeping you from making...
Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial.
And welcome back to our last segment here on Talk Louisiana this morning, January 23rd. It's a pleasure to be joined now by Eitan Hersh, who his latest book is called Politics is for Power, How to Move Beyond Political Hobbyism, Take Action, and Make Real Change. And Eitan, I just want to welcome you to Talk Louisiana. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to talk with you. And you know, we're speaking in a state that takes politics very seriously, and yet it is our sport. It is our religion. We love it. And so this book, to me, it made me look at how we follow politics differently than I have before. And you say political hobbyism, you use the word hobbyism, takes well-meaning citizens away from pursuing power. Hobbyism is a serious threat to democracy because it is taking well-meaning citizens away from pursuing power, and the power vacuum will be filled. And it seems like you're saying, Eitan, that if we follow politics closely sort of on social media and consider ourselves well-informed but don't really get up off the couch and go get involved in some volunteer or some efforts out in the community, that we may be doing more damage to the political process. Tell us about what your research shows and why you wrote this book.
Yeah, so, you know, I look around and I see a lot of people for a long time, but certainly especially in the last few years, spending a lot of time consuming political information. About a third of the country says they spend up to 2 hours a day on politics. But, you know, when you look at the data from everything from news consumption, online engagement, activism, how they feel about partisanship, it would be hard to describe what they're doing as politics, right? Politics is working in groups with strategies and goals to affect the government. That does not describe politics for 90% of Americans. You know, no one who's spending all their time watching football or playing fantasy football leagues thinks they're playing football. But I think a lot of the people who are spending a ton of time reading and consuming news and talking about politics think they're engaged in politics, and they're not.
Well, and so what? How is it that you sort of present this in your book about how people should follow politics, or are you trying to tell people a way that's better than just following on social media?
Yeah, look, I mean, the book, you know, I sound a little snarky, but the book's not snarky. You know, I think a lot of people have really deep care about this country and about their communities, and they really care about what's happening or in the world around them, and so they want to be engaged in politics, and either they don't have the know-how to do it, or they don't have the tools. And so this book is helping people connect their motivations, which I think are mostly really good, to actions. And the way I do that is I follow, you know, first just put the mirror in front of everyone and say, okay, how are we spending our time on politics? Is there a way that we can spend that hour or two a day we're spent consuming news and arguing more productively? And so I follow a bunch of these organizers all around the country who, in different ways from different walks of life, from kids in their, you know, teens and 20s to the oldest person in the book is 98 years old, you know, how they think about politics, which is how do they convince other people, whether those people are voters or politicians, to empower their values.
And is it really kind of saying that we're sort of taking the easy way out if we just say, well, I'm politically involved because I track the news every day versus I'm politically involved because I actually go on Wednesday evening to a club and try to recruit voters? Are we kind of just taking the easy way out?
Yeah, I think it's so easy to, you know, feel connected to politics by talking about it online or at the dinner table or reading that. I think we just prioritize that over real politics. And, you know, we know it. I mean, you know, you can go to most people who say they spend a lot of time on the news and say, okay, cool, well, how I care about this or that issue. I care about, you know, the economy, or I care about climate change or whatever. How do I focus on those issues in my state? And the person who follows all that news kind of has to be embarrassed and say, well, oh, I don't follow any news that could help inform your vote here in Louisiana or, you know, in our town. I could tell you all about the Mueller report, though. Is that helpful? And the answer is no, that's not helpful.
And you do talk about that. You talk about the idea of hobbyism takes us away from spending time working with others to acquire power. And the concept of power, let's talk a little bit about how you address that and how the power really comes in working face-to-face, one-on-one with people, rather than maybe blanketing social media with a bunch of ads. You say, while we sit at home, people who seek political control are out winning over voters. Tell us what you mean.
Yeah, you know, I talk about organizers, some of whom I think readers will really relate to, and some who they really won't relate to. You know, I talk about the Ku Klux Klan in North Carolina in 2018, who went around and offering to help people who were suffering from opioid addiction, saying, you know, hey, this addiction is not your fault, and we here at the White Knights of the KKK are here to help you. And I put that story in there because I think a lot of readers will say, oh, my goodness, I can't believe they're out there doing that. They understand that the way to get power for their views is not necessarily to talk big talk about their grand ideas. It's helping people one person at a time. And, you know, the way that all of the organizers think about politics in the book, all these volunteers who are really in the trenches, they think about trying to get other people on board with them. And it's interesting. The way to do that is mostly through being nice to your neighbors, by being empathetic, by meeting people where they are and bringing them along with you. You know, the skills that we practice online of, you know, the things that we know get shares and likes and clicks is kind of outrage and provocation. And those are exactly the wrong skills that you need to get people to come along with you to empower your values.
The book is Politics is for Power, How to Move Beyond Political Hobbyism, Take Action, and Make Real Change. One thing I found interesting in your research, I guess, has led you to this conclusion. You say political hobbyism is found in all circles, but it is mainly a problem for people who are well-educated and on the political center and left. Why is that?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's mostly a problem just like if you look at all the people who spend a lot of time on politics but aren't doing any kind of volunteer engagement. It's disproportionately people who have college degrees and who are white. And right now, anyway, those people tend to be Democrats more than Republicans. You know, these are the kind of people that feel like they think about politics as big ideas, and they like debating those big ideas. But sometimes the local stuff, the real community organizations, that seems beneath them. You know, it's interesting. You see minority voters, African-American, Latinos, much more likely to participate in political organized activity than white people, even though they spend less time reading, consuming news. And so you see in one statistic after another, you know, news consumption, these college-educated folks tend to focus exclusively on national news. They don't watch or read local news. You look at their activism, you know, token stuff like signing up petitions. You know, they're not doing the real stuff, but they're doing a lot of the kind of shallow engagement on national issues.
And you sort of have a tie that you talk about in the book about, you know, all of us, we love to feel updated and to have the very latest at our fingertips on all of our devices and all. But you say technological changes have strengthened forms of political engagement that are motivated by emotional needs and a pursuit of personal gratification rather than a commitment to the common good, almost like we want to feel special, and that's why we're involved in politics. It's an interesting concept that I'm not sure we always connect with being well-informed politically, or are we just doing it because we want to feel some kind of personal gratification?
Yeah, it's so easy, I think, with technology to feel connected to something from a distance. You know, I feel angry or I feel glory when my side wins, and I get to have that quick dose of emotion from my couch. And so I think that makes it harder to say, okay, am I going to be in a long-term, can I go to a weekly or monthly meeting for 10 years? You know, that just seems so daunting relative to how easy it is to engage online. But I think we all know, and certainly the evidence shows this, that you know, when we're spending time online debating or arguing or learning, we're not affecting anything. We're not really moving people forward. And we're not even learning what we would need to know to learn to move forward. You know, we're not learning how we can influence our own communities. We're not knowing how our own local government institutions work. And so we're kind of learning the wrong things and we're feeling the wrong emotions.
Well, and I'm just curious, as you go around the country and you talk about your book, how is this being received in political junkie sort of circles? Do you feel like people feel offended, or is this book helpful to them? What are you getting in terms of feedback?
You know, it's all over the place. I think a lot of people at first feel offended, like, oh, this person's talking to me, and I do spend all this time. And look, some people have really good excuses why they can't be out there organizing, but a whole lot of people don't. And I think a whole lot of people can look at this as a mirror and say, yeah, I'm spending all of this time on politics, but I'm not doing anything, and can I do more? And, you know, I think that readers of the book will see that the book is not much about judgmental snarkiness. It's about these stories of these amazing people who have somehow managed to influence 1,000 votes every election. How do they do that? How do they talk to their neighbors in a way where they earn their respect and get them to go along with their thing? So, you know, I think from people like my students on a college campus, a liberal college campus, to folks who are, you know, recent retirees who are looking for ways to get engaged, there are real opportunities to learn that politics offline is not the same thing as online. For one thing, it's a lot nicer.
Thank you so much, Eitan. Eitan Hirsch, Politics is for Power is the book. We really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you for joining me. I'm Julie Baxter-Payer on Louisiana Talk Louisiana on WRKF.